What if I'm stuck here forever? Catherine Stockett. The Dragon Pod from Bending Not Breaking. Book 6, Stars. Chapter 4, The Star Scraper. Welcome back to our third episode of the Dragon Pod in Season 6, covering the Dragon Prince and the mystery of Erebos. We are really excited to have everyone listening. We had a little bit of a break between our second and third episodes, but here we are on a roll with Episode 4. And we're really excited to have a special guest. That's the trend this season. We have lots of amazing guests, and this episode is no exception. I am pleased to welcome back Sasha Rojan, who is an exceptional actor. You can find in shows like Bates Motel and Supergirl and The Flash, but you will likely know her best for the incredible and amazing work that she has given us through The Dragon Prince as, you heard it, the voice of Ezrin. And so Sasha isn't just an accomplished actor, though, also an accomplished artist, and you can find that on Instagram. I'm sure we'll talk about that, but welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
You know, I'm all right. It's a nice day. I have air conditioning. It may be hot outside, but it's cool in here, and that is a win. So I'm okay. Tell me what's going on with you. What's new?
I'm starting up university, and I just worked on a movie, which I'm not allowed to talk about yet, but when it comes out, I can.
That's very exciting. Do you have any, like, when will it come out? Like, when will we know? Do we have any ideas?
I have no clue. I'm not sure. I think sometime next year.
Okay. Well, great. Well, we're looking forward to hearing that. That'll be really fun. And going to university, what's like the, okay, this is big. Like, what's the most interesting thing or the most exciting thing you're looking forward to when you think about starting uni?
I'm excited to start expanding my social circle, getting to know new people, and like meet everyone new in my life. I'm just excited for meeting people. That's it.
That's so cool. No, I was a little overwhelmed when I went to college because I went to a very large university. There were like 25,000 students, and so it was just a bleh. And so figuring out like where to find my people were big. What's the class size at your uni?
I have no clue. I think that they're pretty small. I think that the pods are really small. I'm going to an orientation, and I think that for all the groups, I'm in group 7. I think that for my group, there's like 20 people less, I think. Okay. I have no clue. I'm pretty sure there's going to be around 20. So it's not like too small, but it's not too big of a school. I think it should be fine. I hope.
I hope so too. Yeah. It's yeah. They're at least this little pod situation is going to give you a chance to meet a smaller group all at once.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's really exciting for you. I hope it goes well. I hope you're
really
as well. I hope classes go well. It's meant to be a fun time in addition to being a learning time. So I hope both of those things.
Thank you.
Are you doing any other cool projects, or are you really just kind of focusing on school once you start?
I'm going to be focusing on art all the time. Well, acting and art, of course. I will never stop acting. I love acting so much. But I want to focus up on my art a lot more. I want to start painting more. And I want to go to galleries and start selling. And I want to make prints as well.
Nice. So for people who have not seen your art before, what's kind of your, how would you pitch it? Like, what's your style? What's your favorite thing to do? What's your creative outlet that way?
I like to experiment a lot with different media. I love watercolor the best. I have like these felt markers that I started using recently. They're my favorite. They're my favorite type of marker to use. So I've been using those. So I think that, I use watercolor and these felt tip markers the most. Mm. And I don't know, my art is funky. Like, it's very gooky and weird. And I use expressionism a lot. because I don't use the right sort of colors for things, or I add things that like a human shouldn't have, or just stuff like that. I draw a lot of faces. I'm very big on faces. Like, I'll turn a landscape into a face. I love faces. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's exciting for people who want to find you. We'll make sure to give you that plug at the end. Tell us where to find it, because we want to make sure that people can come and check out that work. Well, great. So focusing on art, focusing on acting, and focusing on school. Really neat. So, you know, one of the things that I kind of learned over the first couple of interviews this season is that, like, all of the recording for everything that has already been planned is been done. So I'm curious, you know, as season 6 and now season 7 and what we've now learned is coming out in December, what's it like to kind of see all of this work that you've been working on for years, like, come to this, you know, fruition, to this end state?
It's exciting, but it's also scary because I know that that part of my life is done. Like, that chapter is finally closed. I can't really go back to it. I mean, I can meet up with the actors. That would be me going back, but I can't actually work on the show specifically itself anymore. And that's like the scariest part. The fact that, like, it was my childhood and now it's just like kind of over. Like, I always took that show as my childhood. I had so much fun working on it. And it's crazy that it's all finished up now.
Isn't that wild? Yeah, it's so interesting. Like, and so you started working on the show. How old were you when you started working on the show? Do you remember?
I was around 10 or 11 years old. I would have been grade 6, so around 11.
Yeah, so, like, and now you're going to college, and here we are, like, for season 6 going out. It's like, this is a big transition, right? To kind of witness this throughout your whole experience. That's so cool. Like, I think about what it's like for the people who've been just watching it to grow up with the show. Like, I saw I think it's all tweet recently from someone who's like, I was 13 when it came out and now I'm 18. And, like, there's this whole, like, I've grown up with this. And it's really wild to think about how formative those years can be in terms of developing who we are. So that's super cool.
Yeah.
So I want to kind of transition then to, you know, you being a primal source for our audience around the making of the show and the making of this episode, if you have any tidbits. But I'm curious, was, you know, as we look at this episode, we recognize that, you know, there's only one speaking line for you, I believe. But even with that, I'm curious, is there anything about the making of this episode or even this season that kind of stands out to you about details that are fun or interesting to share?
I think that I filmed most of my lines in one day because I'm mostly at the end of each episode.
Yeah.
Besides the last episode before this one, I'm mostly just at the end of each episode, which I also thought was pretty cool because it's like I get to leave people on a cliffhanger instead of other people. That's I've true. Always wanted to do that. So it makes me excited that I get to be the person that does that. I filmed most of my lines in like one day, I'm pretty sure.
Interesting.
It wasn't like hard to film it either. It was really nice to film. It was still fun to film. I still got to see everybody and like say hi to the producers and whatnot whenever I could.
That's super cool. It's wild to think about how, like, you mean you did all of this in one day? That's kind of just so, like, counterintuitive, I guess, someone who's like, it takes so much time and so much effort to get all this in, and then I just came in for the day and it was done.
Or I would just come in for like 20 minutes, 10 minutes, film one line, and that's it.
Even it's just so interesting to think about how and what goes into it, right? Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing. That's super neat. I'm excited to kind of dive into the episode. But before we do, we pick a lens, right? So we kind of went back and forth, you and I, around like, what could it be? And ultimately, we landed on the lens of being stuck. And I'm curious, what does that mean to you? to be stuck.
Well, in what sort of sense?
Any sense, whatever makes sense for you. Yeah, I think it's, that's the whole point, is we have this whole interpretive landscape. And so I'm curious to hear, like, what even comes to mind when I say it.
When I think of stuck, I think of being stuck mentally, like holding yourself back, thinking that you can't do something, or being in a situation where you know you can't do something because it'll impact another thing negatively or yourself negatively. So it's kind of just like you're stuck, you don't know what to choose. And I feel like that's what this episode is really about. Like, nobody knows what to choose. Nobody knows what to do. No one knows right or wrong. And they're trying to figure it out.
Ugh. Yes. No, I think that's exactly right. You're putting your finger right on it. The image that usually comes to mind when I think of stuck is like, have you ever walked in really muddy water and all of a sudden your foot goes way deeper than you expect?
Yeah.
You're like, I can't move. How do I get my leg out from under here, especially without losing my shoe? I imagine that like physicality of like, I can't move even though I want to. It's this like cognitive dissonance where my brain wants to keep going, but my body is like, nope, you literally can't. And it's a similar thing when you talk about this mental block that you're kind of talking about. It's like this, I want to do something, but I don't know what the right path is. And so we're kind of like in this analysis paralysis situation. So super cool to think about, like, there's this physical element to being stuck, and it's not quite the same as being still, whereas like still and wondering what to do is one thing, but being stuck has this urgency to it. Yeah, really neat. Okay. Do you have an example of a time in your life where you have felt that way?
With university, actually, I never really wanted to do it. My parents have always wanted me to, of course. But I always thought that I could focus on like other things. I really want to focus on my art. I'm going to school for art because I was like, why not? If I'm going to have to go to school anyways. But like the more that I think about it, the more this might have a positive outcome on my life because it'll give me more opportunities to get into different jobs or to make sure that I can sell my art more, just to get better at art. Yeah. There's always those positive aspects, but at the same time, I feel stuck because it's something that I'm not sure that I want to do. I can always change what I want to do. My parents are very lenient that way, which I'm very thankful and grateful for. But at the same time, it's just kind of like, I don't know if I need to do this or if I want to do this or if this is the right thing for me.
Yeah. I can think of so many times where I'm like, this is what I'm, quote, supposed to do. And I'm doing it, but I also feel this like je ne sais quoi, this calling, this joie de vivre that is pulling me in another direction. And it's like, do I go this direction that I'm being called towards, or do I go towards this direction that I'm hearing from people who are wiser and have more experience than I do? And it's really hard to negotiate that. Like, it's an interesting place to be. And I can't imagine that anyone who's listening hasn't had an experience like that. So that seems really applicable to a lot of us. Well, I can't wait to dive into the episode, because I can think of several points in the episode where this is true also. But before we do, we have to remind our listeners of what happened. So I wanted to give you the option. Would you like to go first or second for the 30-second recap?
I'll go second.
All right, I have a timer set. Will you count me down from three?
Ready?
Yep, let's do it.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, so Raylam and Callum they're like Gleamy Tower, and they're going to go up it. And then, you know, Claudia is like, I'm not going to kill the kitten. And then Raylam's like, wait a second, we're not chosen. And then they get dropped. And then they're invited to stay the night. despite that. And then Kareem's like, oh my god, sun scene. And Drago's like, no, don't heal my eyes, heal my wings. And then Celestial Drago or Helves like don't see, but they kind of do see, but like they also are, they Raylam is chosen, and then Terry saves Claudia from the thing, and then Star Touch Elves are immortal, and then I that's out of my that's 30 seconds I'm out of time. Okay, well, I didn't get to everything, but so it goes. That's the nature of the 30-second recap. I'm going to put 30 seconds on the clock for you. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. On your mark. Get set. Go.
Okay. Claudia is choosing between good and evil when she's looking at the kitten, and she really wants to kill it, but then she doesn't. And then Raylam, as you said, goes up the tower, finds out that they're not the chosen two, but then they are the chosen two, and they wanna figure out why the people, the Star Touch elves in the masks, are wearing masks. And then, oh my goodness! And at the end of the episode, I come in, I'm like, Soren, your dad, he's here. Ding. That's 30 seconds.
Yeah, awesome. All right, so you got more than I did, or at least we definitely covered different things, so that's perfect. That gives everybody a chance to hear what's up. And now we can talk about moments of stuckness in the episode. Okay, would you like to go first, or do you want me to drop one on you? Where do we want to go in the episode?
Drop one on me.
All right, so for me, the most obvious stuck is this whole through line with Claudia. And there's this really interesting setup where Claudia is kind of at an impasse because she has just been left by her dad. She tried to leave Terry. She's back. And now she's sitting in this spot, and all she can think about is dark magic, looking at this little cute little kitten. And she's like, I could use its whiskers. I could use its ear fluff. I could use its like nail clippers. Like, it's like all these things that she's just dissecting this animal. But also, on the other hand, she's like, I don't want to use dark magic. And this is really the first time we've seen her be reluctant to use dark magic in the show. And I'm curious what you make of her indecisiveness or her being stuck in this moment. I'm curious, like I don't know that I have an answer, but I'm curious about what comes up for you when you think about this moment.
Well, in the earlier seasons, I feel like Claudia didn't really take into account that what she's killing are lives and what she's doing is wrong. And she couldn't see that because she's following in the footsteps of her dad. So she lost her dad, tried everything that she could to find him, didn't care whether she was making people lose their lives or impacting the lives in Zadia. Sorry, I just lost my train of thought. Yeah, sorry.
I was just gonna say, I think that's a really good point to start with, though, is I forget that she's been in the, you know, the magical parts of Zadia now for a while.
Yeah.
She's been proximate to that, and that's, you know, bound to change your perspective on it at least a little bit. But sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no, it's okay. Yeah, but speaking off of that, she's completely surrounded all the time, 24/7, by these cute animals. So eventually she's going to have to adapt to them and realize that they are actual beings. Like, she gets to see that they live their own lives. They're their own thing. Like, when I look at a bear, that's a life right there. They have their own family. They have their own thing. They were born from something. They're just like me. It's just that they're in a different body. And I think that she's finally realizing that after losing her dad, having him back and understanding what family really means. She can't take other things away from their family, even though it's for her own sake, or even though she wants to do dark magic, she knows that she shouldn't and she can't, because eventually it's taking over her life. It's really impacting everyone horribly. She lost her leg due to it, and she's losing her mind due to it. And I think that she's finally realizing that.
Yeah, you know, it's so wild to me, right? Because she was like so deep in this for all the way up until this point, where, and it was like, it was really like just going down, 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 where I like, it's, she's imagining her coming out of that was really hard for me at the end of last season where she had lost her leg. And I guess like, having lost her leg and having lost her dad in a way where not losing her dad's life, which is clearly something that she had to grapple with several years ago at this point, but losing her dad in a way that is like tangible, a living loss, is something that dark magic can't fix. Where mm-hmm. this was the first time she lost something that dark magic couldn't get back for her. And I think to me, that is potentially one of the reasons there's this element of feeling stuck, that this person who she's admired for so long, who has also used dark magic, is saying, no, this is not the right path. That's big. That's a big change. I really like this, you know, so episode one, Viren's talking about how essentially it's this, I'm going to model this for you because clearly modeling this for you works out better than me telling you. And I think that that really hit her hard. I mean, I can definitely think of times when people have like modeled something and that has shifted the way I thought about it way more than when they told me to do a certain thing. Woof. Yeah, that's big. What else? What's another moment that comes to mind for you, or more about this one that comes to mind for you about the idea of being stuck?
I'm actually not. With Sol Ragam. I thought that at first he was going to be stuck on his options because he's like, should I do anything? Should I have anything back? Why would I want things back? I feel like that's what he's thinking about before we get the cutoff to the next scene. And then we see his scene afterwards. In that initial scene, I didn't know what was going to happen. I thought that he was going to be stuck on his decisions, but it seems like he wasn't. So I want to know what you think about that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, right? Because it's, you know, we're led to believe from Kareem, right? That Sol Ragam having his sight is going to fix everything, right? And it's interesting because often we tell ourselves stories about what will make other people feel better. and I'm like, oh, all they need is a bath and, you know, some lavender scented candles and they'll feel so much better. And when you ask them what will make them feel better, they're not going to say a bath with lavender scented candles. They're going to say, I need to pay rent this month, right? So it's like when we diagnose without really knowing what's going on, sometimes we come to the wrong conclusion. And that can definitely lead us to like, oh, I was planning on this, but you're telling me this now. What do you mean? And so with Sol Ragam, we were kind of led to believe as an audience that he would be, you know, giddy about getting his eyes back. And this, when he says no, we're like, uh-oh, Kareem's about to get lit up, literally. this shift, this change leaves the audience feeling stuck because we're not sure how to complete the story. But then there's also this element of like Sol Ragam being literally stuck because he lost a whole huge experience in part of his life. It's like, instead of losing his legs and can't walk, he lost his wings and can't fly, right? It's like he lost a whole access to significant ability that he had before, and he probably has felt stuck ever since. And when he's finally given the opportunity to get that flight back. Listen, if I lost my ability to fly, I would be trying to fly again, right? how does that sound? Does that sound like a, how does that align with what you were thinking?
Well, I just have more questions about him as a, like, as a being, because why would he not want his eyesight back? He could try and go and find someone else to fix his wings, and then he could just have both. I just don't understand. And I don't understand why he would use his wings to do something evil or to do what he wants to do. Because at the end of the episode, he does mention he wants to reign terror or whatnot. Yeah. Why would he want that?
Well, it's interesting the way he phrased it. I think was We'll rain fiery justice upon our enemies. I might be misquoting that, but that's what I think it was.
I'm pretty sure it's that, yeah.
And so the idea of it being justice, right, is fascinating to me because, you know, to him, it feels as though, like, he has been wronged in his mind. Like, it is human's fault who did this to me. And, you know, spoiler alert, later in the season, we learn that Erebos has kind of been, you know, pulling some strings this whole time, and Solregum has been playing into that the whole time. And he just doesn't know that. And so the story he's been telling has been one of, I'm going to get revenge on the people who harmed me. But again, the story he had was wrong. So yeah, I think for me, you know, your question is very Ezrin leaning, right? This idea of like, how could anybody want that kind of revenge? And I think for me, the answer is, if the story you've been telling is incomplete and you don't, you know, genuinely believe in the best of people, that people don't want to like harm others, then it's easy to come to a conclusion where revenge is the answer. But I'm not an arch dragon and I can't speak for Solregum, so I don't know. But yeah, no, I love the question. Like, what else? What else comes to mind? Any other questions around that? Or thoughts or wonderings?
I'm not exactly sure. Do you have any?
I don't know. Not necessarily about this. The thing that comes to mind as I think about other points of stuckness in the episode is, I think it's interesting to think about Rayla and Callum, right? Where there's this immediate sense of stuckness from this elder who is, you know, literally blindfolded, cannot see them, and is taking them on their word, and is like, yo, are y'all the chosen two? Having never heard of that before. And they're like, no, I don't think so, but, and he's just like, drop. And there's like, there's no hearing them out. There's no questions. There's no, well, maybe they don't know. There's just this assumption. And so what that tells me, I think, is that when we lack curiosity, it seems like that's going to help us stay stuck. Because that's what we literally see in this show, where this elder is like, I'm not going to be curious about this. And he's going to remain stuck. Does that seem right to you? What are your thoughts on that?
It's kind of like he doesn't want to get helped in a way. It's kind of like he wants to stay stuck because maybe that's what he's been that way for so long. Maybe since he didn't obtain, like how they were saying, if like a Star Touch elf removes their blindfold, they can let the light in and see everything. They can see more than anything else. And some people get touched by the stars. I think that maybe since he didn't get touched by the stars, maybe he doesn't want other people to have that opportunity. He wants to stay stuck in what he's comfortable with. Maybe he's scared to open up his eyes again, let the light in.
Oh, that's big. That reminds me of the quote it's our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. It's that we're powerful beyond measure. And that's the beginning of the quote from Marianne Williamson. But the idea of like, it's more the devil you know versus the devil you don't. Like, I know what it's like to stay like this and it's comfortable and we've been managing, versus what would happen if that were to change. I didn't think about that. I didn't consider that as an option. But I think that maybe that's why Cosmo and Astrid are the ones that come after Rayla and Callum, is they're not interested in being stuck. They want to move forward and kind of invite the possibility of change. Maybe that's that puts a different perspective on it that I wasn't considering before.
Yeah, because then also Asher and Cosmo, when they're touching Rayla and Callum at first, they're like, five fingers? Four fingers? Elf ears? And like they could totally just be making that up. They just want to be able to see the sky for one time. They want to be able to see something. They want to be able to do something.
Yeah, I mean, even then, like the idea of a whole group of people choosing to not use a gift that they've been given, right, in order to potentially receive a greater gift later on, of like, I'm going to choose to not use my eyes for my whole life in order to potentially have the option to be star touched or whatever. What was the to rise above and get this superpower of seeing past, present, and future at the same time, is a really interesting like tradition. And you know, it reminds me of deaf communities who there have been several times in the deaf community who have chosen not to get hearing aids for their children or for themselves, because that's the way of life that they've chosen, and they want to continue to live that way, and don't see it as disability, but rather as a just a different way of life. And I could easily see someone like you or me who has the capacity to see to be like, "Bruh, take off the blindfold, use your vision. What are you life?" Right? I could see there being a lot of judgment there, but also there's this element of like humility that I have to bring to that, of like, okay, you're like, in my head, reframing it from, okay, you're choosing to be stuck the way you are when you have the option to change it. Instead, being like, they're choosing this way of life. It's not that they're stuck, it's that they've chosen a path that I don't understand. Which is hard, I think, for me sometimes to do, to like let other people make choices that I wouldn't make, as if I have the power to like change their vote or like one of those things. But it's just an interesting thing to think about. I mean, have you come across things like that, or does that make sense, or does that line up with things that you've experienced?
With my art specifically, a lot of this is about art. With my art, a member of my family, and I won't name names or anything, but a member of my family isn't very enthusiastic about me wanting to be one with the arts or me being an actor. I would say I've been pretty successful in being an actor, and I'm very happy and I'm very glad about that. But they are not the most behind it because it's not practical. It's not a practical job. It's not what they would do. It's not what they would want to do either. And I definitely do not follow in their footsteps at all whatsoever. They're very like business person, all business, no fun, no games. They work like constantly 24/7. But yeah, since I want to have all the free time I can, I want to be free, I want to be whimsical, do whatever. I want to be magical, you know? I want to be able to do art, showcase my art, be an actor, showcase my acting, and just be me. But my way of life isn't their way. And I think that only just recently they're starting to figure that out.
Yeah, it's this like, let me go my own path, even though it's not the path you would have chosen for me. And it's hard because sometimes we feel stuck because we feel like someone's holding us back. And sometimes we feel stuck because we're holding ourselves back. And it's interesting to think about like how we're able to see kind of both of those in this, where it's very possible that, you know, Cosmo and Astrid feel held back and stuck because of their elder and the way that they've kind of managed things over the past several years. But it's also very possible that, you know, Claudia is feeling stuck because of her own inner decisions that she's trying to make for herself. Or we could reframe it and say she's stuck because Viren has kind of held her back because he wants her to act a certain way, and Erebos wants her to act a certain way, and she feels torn and pulled in two directions. So it's interesting to think about like what is the source of our stuckness, right? What is the reason we feel stuck? Who is holding us back? Who is pulling us forward? And how much of a grip does that person or thing have on us is something to consider. Yeah, that's super cool. Like, okay, can we talk about Kareen for a minute?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious about this because, you know, I will admit that my perspective on Kareen is slightly judgmental. But thinking about how Kareen feels really stuck on the past and the way things were and how he always dreamed his life would be, whereas we don't really see much of that in this episode, but Janai is very forward thinking and very you know, willing to see change and willing to, you know, read things a different way. And that has kind of led to this really interesting choice that he has made to sacrifice something that is really important to his people for Sol Regum, who he believes will act on the benefit of people. And that makes me wonder about being stuck and how do we know, who are the people we can talk to when we feel stuck that can help us better make that decision? And I'm curious what comes to mind for you.
I normally like to get the opinion of my sister or any of my friends, really. I even get the opinion of my mom, no matter what the situation is. I tell my mom literally everything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I always like to get different opinions from everybody because no one's going to have the same opinion. They can have similar, but they're not going to have the same. And if I'm, let's say I wanted to choose a slice of chocolate cake or vanilla cake, I need to see who normally likes vanilla cake, and then I'll go to that person, get the reasons why they like vanilla cake. Maybe I'll choose that. And then I'll see in my life who likes chocolate cake. And then I want to see why they like the chocolate cake, why they would choose the chocolate cake, and why they would need it. And then I'll kind of just base my decision off of that. Like, why would I want this or why would I want that? And I feel like everybody in my life can help me decide and choose that whenever I need the help.
This is reminding me of Terry, actually, right? One of the things that Terry says to Claudia is, this is a decision that you have to make on your own and I can't make it for you. I'm willing to walk with you on the path, but I'm not willing to make the decision for you. Which is a really compassionate way of saying, like, this is on you. It's your responsibility to make this decision. Like, I can't choose which cake you should eat. I can tell you what I think. I can tell you why I think that cake is better, but you have to decide which cake you want. How do you feel about that? Do you sometimes I wish somebody would just tell me what to do and it would be the right thing. But that just seems like the easy way out.
Well, everybody always wishes for the easy way out. Like, even I do. I wish for the easy way out 24/7. I don't ever want to make my own decisions. Even if I'm hanging up the phone with someone, I want to wait for them to hang up the phone. I can't do it myself. But even if I'm in a rush, I'm like, you have to do it. I need you to do it. Like, please. Yeah. But I can't always have everything handed down and given to me, because at the end of the day, if I lose everybody, who am I going to have? I'm going to have myself. And if I can't make my own decisions to better myself, then how am I supposed to be there for everyone else? How am I supposed to do anything on my own? I can't be my own human being if I don't even want to be.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, this reminds me, this might be the last thing we talk about unless you have something else, but this reminds me of this line that Ezrin has at the end, right, with Soren, who is, you know, Soren has moved on, right? And he has made his choice. He doesn't feel stuck. And then he learns from Ezrin that his dad is downstairs, and he's like, oh no, of course, I'm completing the line in my head. I'm projecting what I think Soren is thinking, but this idea of like, oh no, I thought I had was done with this, and now I have to be near him again and be proximate to him again. So sometimes, like, this element of choice and this element of being stuck is thrust upon us without our choice, right?
Yeah.
Ugh. Well, is there anything else that we want to make sure we touch on in the episode regarding being stuck?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Yeah. Nothing's coming to my mind either. So what we'll do, everybody, is we're going to take a quick break and we'll come right back with our sacred practice and our final couple of segments. Welcome back. We have a couple more segments for you. Thank you for listening to the Dragon Pod. We're excited to have you, and we're excited to dive into a new sacred practice. For the past couple of episodes, we have been doing Pardes, which you can learn about by listening to those episodes. But now we're shifting to something we've done before, but new to this season. And that is Lectio Divina. And for those of you who remember, that's awesome, but I'm going to remind us anyway. Essentially, this translates to divine reading from Latin. The original practice stems from a Christian prayer practice, and it involves reading a scripture in a very meditative way, in a very prayerful way. And it's intended to help people develop a closer relationship with what they kind of perceive to be the divine by listening to scripture with heart and engaging with the whole self. And so for the podcast, our adaptation of this is that we are using a line from The Dragon Prince, this episode in particular, to help us learn from the show and from one another in the same kind of spirit of learning and treating this show as a sacred practice and as a sacred text. And so I did the same thing that I did with Pardes, and I pin dropped my Netflix needle on a random part of the show, and I landed on this line. Then I'll know what to do. And so there are four steps in Lectio Divina, and Sasha, you're gonna kind of walk through this with me rather. And the first step is really easy. And so it is asking what is literally happening, who is saying the line, what is going on. And since I have it pulled up, I'll go ahead and share this one before we dive in. So this is Claudia, who in the kind of the middle of the show is, speaking to Terry. She has kind of just been saved by Terry with this lavender scented goodness. And she's saying, I need to see my dad. Once I see my dad, I will have the insight I need from that meeting, and that will help me know what to do next. Did I miss anything? Does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Cool. So that's step one. We did it. And so the way that they kind of envision this is that the Lectio Divina is like a ladder, and we're climbing down into the text. And so we've taken one step down, and now we're going to take another. And the next step is the allegorical meaning. And so for our listeners, the allegorical meaning is, what does this line remind you of in other parts of The Dragon Prince, in other TV shows, other books, other media, other stories? And so I'm going to read it for you, Sasha, and then I'm going to invite you to, like, whatever comes to mind, even if it's like, I don't know why I thought of this, but... but here's the line for us. Then I'll know what to do.
The first thing it makes me think of is Adventure Time. Finn and Jake Finn always looks to Jake for everything because Jake has all the insight. I think I mentioned this on the last podcast too. I love Adventure Time. It's my favorite show, if you can tell. No offense, guys. Oh, but yeah. but Finn always looks to Jake for all the insight, for literally everything. He could be choosing what color carrot he wants. If he wants a purple one or orange one, he's going to ask Jake which one's better. Because Jake always seems to know everything. He always gives insight. He's very, very wise because he's also older than Finn and he's Finn's older brother. Mm-hmm. Although he may not act like it all the time in the show, he's more so like the kid. And Finn is always saving lives. He's always the one that's not really goofing around all the time. In the end, Jake really is the older brother and he really proves to be, with Finn always asking him, what should I do in this moment? I need to know how I should go about this and whatnot. He really does look up to Jake. And I feel like that's like the same thing with Claudia looking to her dad. That's someone that she can rely on, something that she can rely on and something that she needs, but she doesn't actually need it. She just thinks that she does.
I totally agree with you. You know, it also, like, as you were talking, I was reminded of the Lion King.
And yeah.
So Simba is, you know, going through his experience of being an outcast and is like, Nala comes along, is like, bruh, we need you. And he's like, no, I can't. And it's not that he says this line, but there's this feeling of, as soon as he sees Mufasa and Mufasa in the stars is like, you know, you're my boy, Blue. And Simba's like, oh, I know what to do. And so there is this element of like, once we receive this omen, this cue, this sign, that all of a sudden we'll have more clarity and insight, which is interesting. Like, looking for that feels like a sense of safety. Like, will you tell me what to do? I don't want to mess up. So I want you to kind of give me that safety of like what I should do. Yeah, that kind of reminds me also of like Frodo and Sam, like going back and forth and talking to one another. Any other things that come to mind from this?
I don't think so.
Yeah. So cool. That's kind of given us a little bit more context into the kind of the feeling that this line is giving us. And that's the allegorical meaning, right? This is that sense, that feeling that we're getting from these other shows and these moments are kind of evoked by this. And so that's the allegorical meaning. And so now we're going to climb down the ladder a little bit further and ask the question of, what about the personal meaning? And so the idea for this step is, what does this remind us of in our own lives? When have we experienced or heard something like this? And so I'll read it once more. Then I'll know what to do.
As I mentioned before, with me going to university, that's not really my choice, but it's something that I feel I'm supposed to do. It's something that I know that I'm supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I have my mom to guide me. So my mom is my guide for this. My mom is my Viren. I'm the Claudia for this. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I follow in what she tells me, since she's older than me, she's wiser, she knows, she may know some more. I feel like she's who I should look up to for this. And she's who I listen to, of course, because she's my mom. I trust her. I like, you listen to your mom or you listen to your parent or whoever is there to help and guide you. You normally listen to that person, no matter if they're right or wrong or good or bad. You listen to that person because they raised you and they did everything. So yeah, she would be my Viren for this. She's the person that I go to know what to do next in life.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think that often people have this person, even if it's not a guardian, right? Or a parent, right? I think even if it's that really wise best friend or that really, you know, person you look up to, a trusted adult. And I think that's the thing that comes to mind for me is like, it's not necessarily the relationship that they have, but the amount of trust you have in this person, right? There's just so much like deep rooted trust for the people we go to. For me, like, I also talk to my mom, right? Anytime I have this big decision, even if like my mom has totally come back with like the wrong answer, but I still go to her for her wisdom and her feedback, even if I think I might disagree. because I still want to know what she might say, because there is this deep rooted sense of, I know that even if she says and comes to a different conclusion than me, that she, I trust that she wants what's best for me. And yeah. I think that that's something that really comes to mind, is like, who are the people that I can go to of that are going to tell me the truth, even if it's not what I want to hear.
Yeah.
That's definitely what comes to mind. I also find that I, one of the things that comes to me when I think about this too, is the idea of, it feels a little, I think you said it really well when you said Claudia doesn't actually need this, but this idea of, I go into like polling mode of like, what do you think I should do? What do you think I should do? What do you think I should do? When I do that when I know the answer that I want, but I don't like the way it makes me feel.
Yeah.
I know what I want to do and I know why I want to do it, but I start polling people because I want them to convince me that the other answer is better. And part of me is like, I already know what to do, is the thought that comes to my mind, even if I don't literally know what to do. But that's what I'm thinking of when I think about how it means for me too.
Yeah, I do the exact same thing. I feel like everybody in their life eventually does that at one point. And I don't like to admit that I do that, but I do. I definitely do that.
Yeah, same. I'm like, oopsie. but c'est la vie, right? This is who we are. Okay, so we're going to climb down one more step. This is the last step of this practice. And this is kind of like, what is this conversation calling us to do? What is, now that we have had this conversation, what's something we want to change, something we want to do, someone we want to talk to? So a call to action based off of this line. Another way to frame it is, if you were to give someone a piece of advice based off of this line in this conversation, what might you say to them? So either what it's calling you to do or a piece of advice you might give. So I'll read it one last time. Then I'll know what to do.
You'll always know what to do as long as you want to do it. That's what I would say. You can't let other people convince you to do something if you're not willing to, and you shouldn't have to convince someone to let you do something or to do something. You should do that yourself, and you shouldn't have to look to other people and be like, hey, I don't want to do this, but I should I do this? You shouldn't look to other people to do that. At the end of the day, that's your decision. Do you want to have a positive impact on your life? Or do you want to have a negative one? Or even if it means to be negative for the time being, and then it turns out to be positive, do you want to have that eventual positive? Or do you want to stay in the negative the whole time because you're comfortable there? You should never be comfortable in your life. That's not what life is about. Sure, be comfortable sometimes, but like at the end of the day, do you want to live in comfortability and safeness? Or do you want to adventure, get out there, make your life better, and be positive in the end, rather than being negative the whole time? There's no point in that. There's no point in living if your life is going to be negative like that, and if you're going to choose to live like that.
Dang. All right. Somebody's dropping some wisdom over here. Okay. Oof, that's big. I love the sense of like, the confidence with which you say that, because I'm like sitting over here being like, dang girl, that takes a lot of courage. Yeah. that takes a lot of like inner strength to be able to like, and I agree. I think that there is a sense of like, I understand why people choose the comfortable path, because the world sucks, right? Because like things are haywire and things are rough out there. But I also feel this deep sense of respect and just compassion for people who do take the courageous route to do what is hard, even though it is to do what is hard because it is hard. And so I'm kind of in awe of that, and I appreciate it. I agree. I think for me, the way I would phrase this is to, I think my piece of advice is that we'll never know what to do. Like it will always be uncertain. The only thing we can do is we can make the best decision we can with the information we have at the time. And I love the idea of sometimes you have to get more information to make a good decision, but also we're human and we're gonna make bad choices in our lives, and it's better to have that courage that you're talking about than it is to be stuck in it and not make a decision, right? It's better to make a decision and fail than it is to stay safe in the harbor without having risked the journey. I think that would be my moral of this line is what I'm comes to my mind. Wow, what a cool thing we just did, right? That we did it. We climbed into this line deeply, and this has kind of given us a little bit more insight. And now I'm hearing that I need to be a little bit more courageous with my life, which is uncomfortable, but good at the same time. Okay, that kind of brings us near the end of our show. We like to end our show with gratitude. And so who is a character from this episode that you're grateful for and why?
I'm grateful for Terry because he made me realize that I need to be more courageous in my life. And he made me realize that at the end of the day, every decision is my own decision. And if he's able to help Claudia and change Claudia for the better and help herself, then he's a person I'm thankful for.
Yeah, no, that's so big. I think that's the reason I'm thankful for Claudia, not because I think she's making good choices, but because I think that she is such a powerful mirror for myself, where she is definitely showing me parts of about me that I'm interested in working on, and I appreciate seeing what it's like for someone on screen to work through things that I have worked through in my own life. And albeit it's not necessarily dark magic, but it is similar. And so I really appreciate for Claudia for that reason.
This is good.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me for this episode. This has been a lot of fun. I want to give you a chance to plug anything that you want to plug or share. If people want to contact you, how would you want them to do that?
Oh, they can contact me through my email. That's SashaZrojen@gmail.com. Or you can go to my Instagram, and that's Sasha Zoe Rojen. Or you can go to my art account. That's Sasha Zoe's Art.
Sasha Zoe's Art for all of those face arts.
Yeah.
Other stuff that's going to come because that sounds like what you're studying. So that's really fun.
Yes.
Amazing. Yeah, go check it out. I'm sure we'll see future galleries and invitations to come and see your work, and I can't wait to see it. So thank you for sharing that for everybody. For everybody else, if you're interested in hearing more content like this, you can join our Patreon. There's lots of cool stuff there. We still do monthly live episodes covering Avatar The Last Airbender. We're in season 3, coming down to the wire there. And we hope you'll join us there and support the show. And we are thankful for all of our listeners for being a part of it. And so, Sasha, thank you so much one more time. This has been another episode of The Dragon Pod. Thank you for joining, and I look forward to next time.
Thank you very much.